Reading, Ede said lightly, a dangerous pastime.
Well, welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are a podcast that reviews some of the internet's favorite books. So that means stuff that you see everywhere on BookTok and Bookstagram. And we tell you if they're actually good or not, especially if you're busy and can't get to everything. I'm Casey.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Caitlin. Today we are doing a book that you may have been scared by on Bookstagram because she is double C thick.
Triple C.
We are doing The Priory of the Orange Tree by Samantha Shannon. And it's like 850 pages of high fantasy. So you got to buckle up for this one. It took us a little bit to review this for you. It's kind of a fantastical journey with mostly badass woman female characters. There's some magic, there's some dragons, and there's basically an imminent threat that's going to unite two sides of the world somehow. And the characters are basically on the quest to make sure this imminent threat doesn't rise again. And honestly, there's so much ground in this book. It's probably all I'm going to give you for now because there's a lot.
Well, this book is not only 850 pages, but it's bigger than any other book, like tall wise.
Yeah. It's tall and wide and thick.
despite being a big boy, lots of people are reading it. So let's get some reviews.
Okay.
You want to go first?
Yeah, I can go first. So I actually found a 1-star review that I thought was funny. This is from Colleen on Goodreads. A bloated, leaden behemoth lacking in any originality, character development, engaging plot, or good writing.
It's probably Colleen Hoover because that's what her books are actually
like. I know. See, and here's the thing. I'm gonna defend the book and say the writing is good. There's not bad writing. It's a behemoth. She's not wrong in saying that. But there's intense character development and there's parts of the plot that are engaging. So also originality. I've never seen anything like this.
What did you think it was? Game of Thrones? Absolutely not.
I don't know. I don't think it's very original. I'll be honest. Okay. I definitely have the lowest opinion of this book out of all of us. And I would not say give it a 1-star review. I think that's too aggressive, but I kind of agree. I don't think it's very original. And I also definitely think it's bloated.
It's bloated.
But the writing was good.
Yeah. No, you can't say she's a bad writer. She's an amazing writer.
Well, okay, question for you guys. Have you read Lord of the Rings or The Hobbit?
I read The Hobbit and I hated it.
I've read The Hobbit as well. I didn't hate it, but I felt kind of eh about it.
I feel like the people who can make it through Lord of the Rings would be the most appreciative of this kind of book because it's similarly like entire world building, quest based, and it's very long.
Or Game of Thrones.
I haven't read that one, so
I didn't read Game of Thrones, but I watched Game of Thrones and I have a lot of opinions on this, but we can get into it a little bit later.
Okay.
Okay, I can go next. I found a 3-star review because I felt like it actually really resembled my opinion. So here it goes. It's off Goodreads. Okay, so I finished this behemoth. Was it good? I don't know. I enjoyed it for the most part. Certain aspects of this book absolutely soared. But overall, it's way too long, and the plot is a bit of a mess. The word that comes to mind is inelegant. Given how much space Shannon has to set the stage for an intricate plot, I was left pretty disappointed on that front. The plot isn't bad per se, but it's also nothing to get excited about. The downbeats, which are certainly essential to a story, were a bit too slow. And in a book that's over 800 pages, that can make reading a slog.
I can see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You kind of know what you're getting into when you pick up an 800-page book. I mean,
look, I think I can easily read an 800-page book. I found this book boring. I genuinely did. I did not think the plot was exciting. I thought there are specific things I'll talk about later that I think would have really changed things for me. But yeah, I was pretty disappointed, and I felt like there wasn't a lot of finesse to the plot or surprising things that happened. So an 800 page book that doesn't surprise you, I think, is like, why is it 800 pages?
Okay, valid. We'll get into that. Yeah. I'm going to give you a 4.5 star review from Storygraph. And I feel like there was stuff in it that definitely connected to how I feel about it. It reads, I love this book so much. The world building was amazing and the characters were so complex and flawed, but still so lovable. And the plot was very interesting. I found the religious aspects of it to be really intriguing too. My only issues would be that some parts of the plot were quite convenient and the characters would just so happen to stumble onto exactly what they needed, which makes the plot seem less impressive. Also, I found the blank at the end to be extremely rushed. Like for an 800-page book and the stuff that happens, that's a spoiler alert, to resolve in 10 pages is a little annoying. I honestly would want the book to be longer so the blank could be expanded upon. But regardless of that, I loved it despite its very minimal flaws. And I would definitely recommend this to people who enjoy fantasy.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I felt. Like there were definitely some flaws, but like I enjoyed the ride. I love fantasy, so it's going to be hard to find me one that I don't just like stick with.
All right. Well, we're ready to do our personal ratings then.
Well, you got to give the Goodreads once first.
I always skip over that.
Okay. She's like, let me savage this book for you real fast.
I'm not going to savage it. I thought there were some really good things. It's just that there were also some things that like really like damaged my opinion of it too. So the overall Goodreads rating is 4.2 out of 5, and the overall Amazon rating is 4.6 out of 5. So that's pretty close to what y'all seemed to vibe with the book about.
Yeah, I gave it a 4. It was a little long, and for as long as it was, there were some things I would have liked to see instead of some of the lengthy parts, but the characters I liked a lot for the most part, and I really liked the storyline, so I gave it a 4 because the writing was great and I could overlook some of the plot holes and flaws.
Yeah, I gave it on Goodreads after a quick, like right after I read, I gave it a 5 because even though, yes, there were some plot holes and too convenient of plot points at times, I just really loved the characters, their relationship and the world building was just, I'm a sucker for world building. But probably looking back, I probably would give it probably 4 to 4.5 out of 5.
Yeah, I gave it 3 out of 5. I just felt like I expected something a lot more intricate. The review that I read really, I think, nailed it with like the word inelegant. That's kind of how I felt, that there wasn't a lot of like, oh my gosh, the schemes and like the intricacies, like this genuinely takes 800 pages to develop. I just didn't feel that way. And so, but yeah, lots of people loved it. So I loved the characters. I'd second that. And the writing was good. But the world building is actually something I would critique a little bit.
Okay.
Okay. Well, we've all kind of hit on the characters being likable. Did you guys have a favorite character?
Tane? Is that how you say it?
Tane, I think.
Tane, I loved her. I was like living for her parts. I related to her because she has this like crushing anxiety to like do well and like outperform. And I was like, I find this a little too relatable probably. But a close second was Ede.
Mm-hmm. Me, exactly the same. I loved dragons were fun. But Ede being like the super spy that's protecting the queen and like has magic. I was like, feminist hero here.
I did love the girl bosses. I would probably say Ede over Tane personally, but I also really, really loved Loth and how he got tangled in all this because of all the women he cared for in his life and just kind of went with it and was a total hero about it. And he was funny and cute. So
yeah.
I enjoyed him and his relationship with Margaret, his sister. It was really sweet.
Do you guys think the book is more plot or character driven?
I would say more plot driven. We definitely have, we have a four character main character point of views, but it's all leading up to one big plot with many plot twists.
Mm-hmm. I would agree.
Yeah, I would agree. It's plot driven too. These characters were kind of set on this course before they even existed. So they're just kind of along for the ride, for fate to take them wherever it pleases.
Yeah. Okay. And have you read or would you read other books by the author?
So surprisingly, I have, and I didn't realize it when I bought the book, but then I saw the name and I was like, I recognize that name. And it's because I've read her other series, The Bone Season. I'm on book four on that one. And I've taken like a 2-year hiatus on it because I forgot about it for a second. But I started that in high school, actually. And then started reading it throughout college whenever I had free time. And she's a really good writer. That world is also, it's like a post-apocalyptic world where this, what it's alien race, but it's better than like just what you're thinking of alien race, like rules humanity.
The blue and people, like, the blue sexy book.
No, it's more of like humanoid people rule. The UK is where it's set, and they really don't know what's happening outside of the UK. And it's these people with born powers like dreamwalking and telepathy and shapeshifting, and how they're put into like classes and then suddenly disappear to service these aliens. It's really hard to explain because it's a very in-depth world that no one's really ever written about, but it's really good.
That does not surprise me.
Yeah.
Casey and I have not read anything else by the author.
No.
Sorry, I don't know anything about that alien race thing. She did just come out with a prequel to this, and I'd be curious, but that's still another big commitment because she is also thick.
Is she?
Mm-hmm. I saw the pictures.
It's set like 500 years beforehand, right?
I mean, I assume we can guess where and when it takes place, but...
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't read any other books. I would consider reading her other series. I don't think I'd read the prequel to this book. But there were enough good things about it that I would give her another chance.
Okay. And the behemoth of a question, how is the pacing of the book?
I'm sorry, the pacing of this book was 0 out of 5 stars for me. The pacing was so bad.
I blew
through like the first 200 pages, and I was pretty into the first 200 pages. And after that, I just felt like I was plodding along and plodding along and plodding along. And it just really never hit a point where I was super excited again. There was some action and some really well-written like battles and fights, but again, nothing happened that I didn't expect would happen. And so I was just left pretty unsurprised or happy with the pacing.
And how long did it take you to read?
Oh, I don't even know. It's a little bit unfair because I started it and then I forgot it when I was going on vacation. And so I had to wait for a week to pick it up again. But I think if I don't count the break, it probably took me like 2 weeks to read.
I may be the odd man out here. I liked it more than Casey did, but it took me a month to read. I went and put in my Goodreads that I finished. And I was like, oh, I started this the same day last month. I got like kind of probably about where Casey's talking about. I got like a third of the way through it. And then everything was like kind of sad. And I had got to where like I got kind of busy and needed to read some other books first. So I took like quite a break from it and then got back to it. I don't think the pacing was terrible. I think it helped that it was broken down into sections and then broken down chapters were from different characters' point of views on different parts of the world. So I think that helped. There were like really good start and stop points, but I stopped a little too long.
Yeah. I'm exactly in Caitlin's boat where I got to the exact point she's talking about. And it took me a month to read it because I took like a week and a half off to do other things. But yeah, it does help that it's broken up into parts. I think that I disagree with Casey on the 0 out of 5 pacing. I think the pacing is okay. Maybe we'd give it like a 2 or 3 out of 5.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Was that your busy girl rating? Are we skipping to that?
No, that's not the busy girl rating. That's pacing.
Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Now we're on, would you watch it as a movie or a TV show?
Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah, I say maybe.
I'd be interested in a TV show. Not a movie. A movie would be too much.
No, yeah. It'd have to be Game of Thrones-esque, but I don't know if it has quite as much action as Game of Thrones. A lot of it's just kind of people going places.
I think it could be a good TV series with creative liberties.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A little more magic.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. I think now we're to our busy girl rating.
All right. Well, Catherine, what does a 4.5-star review and 2 out of 5-star pacing review equate to in Busy Girl World?
A 0. It is not friendly for busy girls at all. God.
We all took a break while reading it.
Yeah. This is okay. To say that it took me over a month to read it, and I'm the crazy freak who can read a book a day. Like, that's saying something. Mm-hmm. It takes a while. Not to say that I don't recommend this book. I do. But for busy girls, it may not be the book you want to pick up.
I second that completely. My busy girl rating is also 0 out of 5. I'm like, look, if you're busy, just wait till you're less busy. Like, that's the truth.
Yeah. The more I think about it, I would say, yeah, if you're busy and you're just curious, don't pick it up. I would say if you really like fantasy or high fantasy, like 1 or 2 stars, like if you love that kind of thing, you may be way more into it. But it is 850 pages of lengthy world building. So,
yes,
more of like a cozy winter break read.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I put it down during winter break.
Summer vacation.
Oh my gosh. It's so big that it's hard to even take on a plane with you. It like counts as a carry-on.
Yeah, it's like your personal item.
I did do it as a carry-on for winter break and I regretted it wholeheartedly.
Yeah. All right. Even those of the hosts who loved it, really think about it before you pick up the book. But that brings us to our spoiler alert section. Woof, woof, woof. I'm so excited. Okay.
So when I was perusing the interwebs about this book, I found this interview that Samantha Shannon did, kind of giving the pronunciation of all of her characters and prefacing her story for Bloomsbury. And she said in an interview that the book is based off of an old tale called George and the Dragon, which was super problematic, apparently. I've never read it. And then her book also intertwines Japanese and Chinese mythology with dragons and that kind of thing. So did y'all know about this tale? Because I was not aware of it. And then what did you think about like her inspiration with Chinese and Japanese mythology in this book?
I did see her disclaimer at the beginning that it was like taken from several different pieces of like mythology and stuff. And I was in there like, oh, I'm pretty good at mythology, but I have no idea what this was taken from. Hence the fact that it's like East Asian, my bad. I'm not very great at that mythology. But I did definitely get like East Asian vibes and could picture it. And like, especially the honor of being like defending your people and your country and your name. Like, I feel like I definitely picked up on that despite not knowing anything about George the Dragon.
Yeah, I would second that. I have no idea what George and the Dragon is, but I really liked the mythology of the true story of how the dragon was initially trapped was because of this woman who refused to be a damsel in distress. But the Sabrin's culture had been built by the man who tried to make her a damsel in distress and lied about the story, which I'm assuming is what the reference to George and the Dragon is. Genuinely, I've not read the story, but I really liked that sort of piece of the novel. And so I think that it actually resembles a lot of mythology, because that like princess tale of the damsel in distress is like pretty universal. And so that was something I think, you know, most people probably immediately identify. As far as like the East Asian influence, it definitely gave me Avatar vibes of like sort of a Western retelling of like East Asian culture and politics. But I liked it. I liked the dragons and all the cultural stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. I have a question in my head. Here's what I was picturing based on her descriptors: is the East, Seiki and stuff, more like Japanese, Chinese, East Asian kind of culture? I got hardcore like white people vibes from Sabrin's thing. And they talked about redheads and stuff. And then where Eid is from, I pictured more like Middle East brown people. Sure. And then, but also like there were black people, Loth and Margaret. Mm-hmm. But they seem to come from also the North. So, but maybe the South was also,
I think it's,
I don't know. I felt there were allusions to our world's makeup that helped you grasp the culture of each area a little more.
I think she utilized pretty well religion in the sense of East versus West, because the West was definitely like the developed countries, I put in quotation marks.
And it gave me religion based on white savior vibes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It was very much so like the West was truly what you think of like Western Judeo-Christian values. Mm-hmm. And then the East is more of the old world. I'm trying to find a way to explain this. Like steeped in tradition, culture, history, and has a very long history.
Right, like more worshiping multiple gods, not a saint.
More philosophy versus doctrine, sort of. Yeah.
Yes. Okay, so we're on the same page. That's what I wanted to ask is like, did you guys get the same world makeup vibe that I did?
Yeah. And for some reason, I imagine Yiskalin, the dragon. Yeah. Yeah, the dragon infested place. I imagine that is like Russia for some reason. And it might just be the bunch of like vowels or non-vowels consonants in its name.
No, I could get that, because I definitely kind of thought they were more probably white-ish, but not totally Western culture-esque. I guess Northern culture, Northwestern culture. Yeah. they're kind of doing their own thing. That's the kind of mysterious one, but.
Yeah,
they're probably just all like hobbits living in the scary volcano world. I don't know.
Yeah, right. I just like that the book kind of intertwined a lot of different components. I mean, it is an 800-page book, so you really hope that it has like a very deep themes and a lot of different themes. And I think it executed well on that. I didn't recognize a lot of the mythology, honestly.
I just think how she described their cultures really helped contextualize it in our minds, since it gave us a starting point from our own culture, but was also still like totally different.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Well, it was just nothing like I'd ever seen, but Casey, you seemed to disagree with me earlier, so I'd love to hear your opinion.
Okay. I'll just get into it. I'll get on my soapbox and do my little spiel. I loved that this book was like culturally diverse, diverse sexualities, lots of empowered female characters. I thought that was all amazing. And I loved that I started calling this the Schitt's Creek approach, because discrimination just like doesn't exist in Schitt's Creek. And it's seen as sort of like a refreshing take. Like you can like genuinely like take a load off from like the discrimination you might experience by watching a show where like people are just accepted for who they are. That's kind of what this book is. There's none of the toxic, like, sexual assault, men being predatory to women, dynamics. At least I don't, there was a lot of discrimination between countries, but not discrimination based on skin color. And so I felt like that was really refreshing. However, I think that the book made that its main selling point and didn't develop enough of the plot and uniqueness of plot and characters I would have liked to have seen. So what I mean by that is the characters were very complex, but they weren't surprising. So I've mentioned it before. I anticipated everything they would do before they did it. It seemed like they had a very easy time accomplishing their goals. Like there was no point in which I thought the main characters were not going to triumph. And it also felt like they encountered very little hardship, which I found not only hard to believe, but also a little lazy. So part of like the specific examples I'll point to for that is that every time they had to travel great distances, some magical creature just showed up and like spirited them across a continent. And to me, normally one of the best parts of a fantasy novel and one of the best parts to build a world is when characters are forced to work on a new plan and scramble to still make things happen. And I think some of the best characters are introduced that way because the main characters, whoever they are, have to go into the underbelly basically to make the plot still happen and still like win the day. Because none of that ever happens, all of the characters are essentially royalty or courtiers, because the characters never actually have to like travel through the masses or travel through the worlds.
I will give you counterpoint, Loth and the Pirates. The pirates do end up being important.
They do.
But yeah,
they
he's basically the only one.
Yeah. I do think the pirates are like, yeah, sort of the one time they don't do that. Also, to be fair, though, the pirates always successfully like get the travelers from point A to point B. So what I mean is like there was very little forcing of the characters to improvise, which I think leaves them comparatively flat to other series where they have to develop and make more difficult choices and do things that they don't know will work. The other thing is that there was very little manipulation and plotting. So there weren't a lot of times when like when I think about what made Game of Thrones really good for me, despite the fact that I found it really problematic, is that the characters have these extremely intricate plots that they do where they betray each other, they keep secrets, they sacrifice each other for their ultimate goal. And I felt like this book was completely devoid of that. The characters never fail. They never fail at their tasks, and they also never fail morally. And I think that's a little bit boring.
I think those are fair points. I guess what I liked about it was that it wasn't Game of Thrones like, because I don't love some of, I mean, like you said, Game of Thrones is problematic. Yeah. But I kind of liked that.
What I wanted was a story where women, people of color, different sexualities were empowered and not impressed, but still were forced to make really hard decisions, had to plot, had to be real people and make messy choices and think on their feet and travel through this scary world and improvise. And I personally didn't feel like it delivered that.
I will say, for being high fantasy, it lacked a lot of violence until the very end for the most part. And I feel like that's where a lot of the intrigue comes in other fantasy novels, is, you know, a cutthroat killing someone or whatever. Mm-hmm. And like the cutthroats never succeed in the book. And really the only person who dies that you're sad about is Kit. Mm-hmm. And you're right. So there's like not a lot of stakes. Not a lot of, like, there are stakes, but not the same kind as you've seen a lot of books.
And I think that you can do that without killing people. Like, again, I actually think Avatar The Last Airbender is a really good example of this, of, like, there being a lot of changing of the plans and scrambling that put them in a bad position, but people don't die.
Not me thinking earlier you were referencing like the blue Avatar.
Excuse me. No.
That makes way more sense now.
Avatar the Last Airbender.
Yes, now that makes way more sense. I was like, Eastern Asian culture and Avatar?
No. So I think that you can create those stakes without including death, but I didn't feel like that was successfully pulled off.
I will agree that I saw most plot points that would happen coming. Mm-hmm. And things did fall into characters' lap. But I think in the bigger picture, like, it was fate and things were interwoven the way they were supposed to be. And I didn't mind some of that.
Yeah.
I guess I'm more okay with it because it's not a series. It's one book. And I don't think she plans to do a sequel with this. So I think I like it more because of that. But if it was like more like an Avatar series, I would have been more judgmental about the book.
See, I'm the opposite. I'm like, you had 800 pages and this was all you could have done with 800 pages. Like, to compare, Sarah J. Maas wrote Silver Flames in like 600 or 700. And that book is way more complicated. Like, I just think she had so much time and space to create something more intricate that there's really no excuse that she didn't do it.
But counterpoint, Court of Silver Flames is preceded by 3.5 other books to set up some of those characters.
That's true.
And they do a whole lot of nothing for most of the book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true. But it's 800 pages. There are books
that's why I drew the comparison to Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. It's a whole lot of just going places. And you never doubt they're going to triumph. But it's a lovely journey.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I like the characters enough that I didn't mind. And there were enough little plot twists, like the woman and the witch in the woods and like the prioress being evil and some of that stuff that I was like, oh, okay. So kept my interest enough that I wasn't mad.
Yeah.
I just saw all of those things coming and it didn't end up even mattering. Which is like my other complaint is like a lot of the twists, it doesn't matter. Like when you find out that Sabrin is really the child of the witch of
Ainz,
the Lady of the Woods.
Yes, that doesn't matter because she was already barren.
Yeah, it just doesn't, like, it didn't even end up mattering. And so I'm like, you know.
No, I would have liked a little more intrigue from her earlier on, and from the prioress, a little more manipulation. Also, you get introduced to this court life in the East really early, and then it just kind of like stops existing until Loth reappears over there and Tane shows up and they go to the other court over there. And so, like, there are some stuff I could definitely see, but I don't know. It wasn't enough to like dissuade me from liking the book.
Yeah. The last part of my critique that I put on Goodreads was that you could have started the book at page 400 and not lost anything. So
you lost backstories, character building, world building. That's what a lot of the beginning of the book is. Like, you don't know why. You have to know why Tane is so sullen and why Eid can't, like, she's loyal to her people, but also she falls in love. Like,
you
need that stuff.
I think, from my perspective, you could have cut out a good 300 pages of the book if you just spent less time on Eid just walking around the court. Like, I don't feel like she investigated, but she didn't actually do any investigating and she didn't find anything out.
No,
and
like the
her theory wasn't correct.
The plots with Trudy and with the king getting killed and stuff, like, that stuff was interesting, but then it stopped being interesting again. So I get that, but there was enough to tease me along.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay. I agree. There's parts where I feel like I could edit out where it was repetitive that could have brought down the page numbers.
Okay. And this is my very last thing. You just reminded me of it. I loved, absolutely loved the idea of Tane competing to be a dragon rider. And then the trials are completely glossed over. They're not even a major part of the book. I thought that was going to be Tane's complete story arc, is doing the trials.
I did too. I thought it was going to be a lot more of me and my dragon riding buddies that I worked so hard for.
Another part where they don't even betray each other.
Even though they like set it up to where they could betray each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of wanted her to murder that one dude, but.
Same.
Yeah. That's my last thing. I did think that there were strong points to the book, but I also had significant critiques. So that's why I gave it 3 stars. There you go.
Okay. Well, we've talked a lot about 2 of the main characters, at least, but there are 4 main characters in this book. So you have Tane, who we just mentioned, who's the dragon rider, descendant of this queen, and has a gemstone in her side, in her rib. Then you have Eid, who's a member of the Friary of the Orange Tree, and she's trying to protect Queen Sabrin from harm. But also is falling in love with her. But then you have the 2 boys who we haven't talked about as much. We've talked about Loth a little bit, who's this like nobleman from the West who is very devout religiously and is learning that, you know, the world isn't exactly what it seems. And then we have not talked about at all Niklas, who is a old fuddy-duddy who thinks he knows everything. And is
a whiny bitch.
He's a whiny bitch and he's a drunk and he literally does nothing besides at the end. He has some plot points. Anyway, you can tell my opinions on him. What did you think of these 4 points of views? Let's kind of dive into each of these main characters.
I understood Niklas's character. I don't think they needed him necessarily to be a character. He was kind of like this. I didn't really like reading his perspective. He was just really caught up on his old love and was really selfish. And like, I understand he helped tie the 2 continents together to achieve their goal or whatever, but it kind of sucked.
Yeah.
Loth. I loved Loth. Sweet, chivalrous Loth, who just wanted to keep everyone happy and then had this like crisis of belief because the people he cared about like turned his world upside down, and he got the most like adventure out of everyone, which was kind of fun. So
yeah,
my opinion on the boys.
Yeah, I mean, I'd agree. I mean, we've already said like Tane and Eid were my favorite. I thought they were by far the most interesting characters. But Loth was nice. Yeah, Niklas, you could see a mile away. He was going to get some half-assed redemption arc. And I was like, nope, I'm not forgiving this asshole. but yeah, I agree with your comments, Caitlin.
I understood his point is that he needed to be on Psyche.
I was pronouncing it Psyche, but Psyche? I do not know.
I was pronouncing
Psyche. He needed to be there so that he could be a foil to Tane. And I understood it. But he felt like a waste of pages to me. Like I kind of just wish it was just 3 and called it a day. I like the idea because a lot of this book is about religion and it's about the crisis of faith and about how one of these religions, it's never like accurate per se, but it's one who's trying to proclaim like almighty, like this is the one true religion. But then it turns out like their entire premise is wrong.
Everyone's got it wrong, basically.
Everyone's got
it wrong.
They all have pieces of the puzzle, but not the full story. And it's that's super interesting. So I was okay with Tane, Eid, and Loth because they were part of that. But Niklas didn't feel like he was part of that at all. He was just this like grouchy old man.
He doubted his faith because he got exiled. And also, the one thing that maybe was a value of him was his like alchemical quest for the like elixir of life that he took the pirate on, though, and it like tied in that other character that was in Tane's past and whatever, and the 2 women who originally took on the Dark One. So like I saw that part, but like anyone else could have done that.
Yeah, you could have just had it about Cleo and then like Cleland and having Eid find out more about Cleland's past and then how she's connected to that.
Right. You could have shipwrecked Loth there on that island.
Yeah.
Problem solved.
Right. Yeah, agree.
So we can easily say he was our least favorite character.
Yeah, pretty much. Least favorite.
I will say someone you get a lot of perspective from, but not like a first person perspective from, is Sabrin, who at first I really hated. Like, she was a mean, cold lady. And then you kind of grow to like her. I totally still didn't like love her by the end, but she was a complex character who was very present. And I also appreciated because she raised the stakes for Eid. Eid really had like no foil and no stakes until she fell with Sabrin. So.
Yeah. And I did appreciate, I thought Sabrin was very complex. And I sort of liked the idea of this woman who's trying to keep her country together, even though she eventually becomes aware that it's built on a lie. My similar to you, Caitlin, though, I never really grew to like her. And I was honestly pretty confused as to how she was such good friends with Loth and how she got Eid to fall in love with her. I was like, really, Eid, this bad bitch, you know, chosen one, ancestor of these great women, chose you? You're whiny and cranky.
I did kind of enjoy, though, that their point of falling in love was that, like, Eid could speak cold, hard truth to her and be a little sarcastic, and that's what, like, warmed them both up to each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did not like Sabrin either at the beginning, and I don't totally like her now, but I'm going to give her this. I liked her plot in the sense of how power can really take a toll on a person, especially because she comes from this long line of like these powerful women. And there's this myth, there's this mythos around her about how she keeps the nameless one from rising, essentially. And she has to bear a child. So there's this like idea that she has to get married and has to have a kid. And then when she loses her husband and then loses her child and becomes barren, there's this crisis moment with her because it's like, I can never have a kid, so my line stops here. But then she kind of goes through some retrospective and says, I never really wanted to marry a guy. I just did it out of duty, and I never wanted a kid, but I just did it out of duty. And I liked that kind of candid conversation she had with Eid, and Eid was willing to tell her the cold, hard truth, like Caitlin said. So that I respected her by the end of the book. I don't know if I liked her, but I respected her.
I will say, too, I think Casey sort of mentioned it earlier. You get all this badass dragon stuff for a while in the beginning, and then you just spend a really long time in Sabrin's court. And that's kind of like, time, look at my watch, what's the rest of the world doing? That was an area I think we could have cut down a little. Like, you needed the intrigue and the murder plots in there and, like, the love story, but it was still really long. That's where I think there could be tripping.
Yeah. Hot take. I don't think you needed that like spy master in the court. I don't think he was necessary.
No, that's what I mean by plots. But Loth could have been sent away for any reason, you know?
Right. But he is basically, Loth was kind of a sissy until he had to like go be a man.
That's
so
definitely
there
true.
Is that important point.
Yeah. Loth's whole like thing is that because he got out of his country and expanded his worldview, it expanded him as a person.
Yeah.
Right. He took some risks. He got the Draconic Plague.
Right.
Also, okay, this is another thing. The Don Morosa. Why did Loth not end up with her?
I think they kind of alluded to it.
Okay. I didn't know if I was reading into that too much or what, but like he kept kind of thinking about her. But you also were like, I think you'd like to just settle for Eid because they're good friends, but also like, that won't happen.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought he'd be more White Knight rescuing the Don Morosa than he was instead his sister went over there.
Yes.
Okay. So we kind of talked about the Priory of the Orange Tree. They believe, like, not what the West believes, that this man slayed the dragon god guy and saved everybody, but the woman did and was like, no, I'm not your hoe. And so the Priory worships basically the mother, Cleolind, and part of that is this orange tree that gives magic. I thought that was interesting, but didn't go as far as it could have been interesting. There are two other trees like it, but they're both dead, so who cares? And then this witch wants the tree, but also then magically Tane could also just eat it and be a badass with some magic at the end. That was like too easy of a plot device right there, just like, here, you have some too.
Well, okay.
I don't know.
Tane's made sense. I will
it
fight
made
you on
sense,
that.
But I was like, really? She just gets magic in time for the big fight.
Well, it was more of like she was getting it for Eid. And the reason why she could get it was because she's a descendant of this queen who took another tree's fruit.
But I was still like, that's convenient. That was my one point where I was like, that's really just too convenient.
No, my one point was when Loth got shipwrecked on Feather Island. I was like, that's obvious.
My one
point. It was obvious. He wasn't shipwrecked. She took the boat there.
Yeah. Also, my one point was when they somehow miraculously got every country on Earth to work together with like a month's notice. I was like, really? Every country signs on after centuries of hating each other's guts.
And like so deep religious, like
these
divides.
Random girls that this thing's happening.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And no one wants anything from them. The guy's just like, okay, I don't need to marry Sabrin. I believe you.
I will say though, I really liked that emperor of like the 12 lakes or whatever, his kingdom. I was like, this is the part that I would want to see in a movie is what his kingdom looked like.
Yeah.
And also he was just kind of like, I know it's expected of me and screw it. I love to be contrary. Like, no court people are going to puppet master me. And I thought he was kind of fun little spice in there, but I would have liked more of him.
Yeah.
But he was just like, okay. And the great warlord, he says, cool, we'll go.
Well, cause that's the thing that like, they're all coming together, but like the West deeply mistrust and despise people who were in connection to dragons, like even talked to a dragon or was near one. And then suddenly like the West is like, olive branch, let's fight this dragon.
Yeah. Let's actually fight with your dragons who we previously would have killed on sight.
Yeah. And I think they're still mistrusting, but they're desperate. But also like, it's hard to believe, yes, that every single country is like, okay, like there should have been some holdouts maybe that were just like, nah, we'll watch and see what happens. I mean, I guess the Priory, like they never came, the Urser or whatever, but yeah, like the ending conflict and how it resolved was like way too convenient and way
too quick,
not interesting.
Yeah.
Like you knew what was going to happen, the end.
Yeah. If it was going to keep the same amount of pages for a book, I would have taken out the court intrigue and some of the parts in the beginning and then added them to the end to go into more depth about the battle.
And I will say, I thought the Tane's dragon was dying and like sacrificed herself for her. I was like, wow, that's sad. And then she was magically fine. I was like,
yeah, I was confused by that as well.
Yeah.
She was like, they just swoop down and pick up Eid. I was like, oh.
Okay. Well, speaking of dragons, there's this whole like fire dragon, water dragon, duality, balance of the universe aspect in the book. What did you guys think about that?
Meh.
It didn't totally make sense to me. I liked the idea of it, but I felt like how the imbalance was created. I don't know if I just like didn't fully, like it was just me who didn't fully get it, but I just never like totally was like, oh, so this is how it works. I was also like, but why are the fire dragons evil and the water dragons good? Also, why do the water dragons get to exist even when the powers that be are balanced and the fire dragons don't? I was just, I don't know if I was just like not thinking it through.
No, I felt the same way. I was confused about why they both existed. And I know there were like less of them or whatever, less were being born because the duality. And then there was the comet and I was like, okay, you keep bringing up the comet. Is it coming? Like,
I thought it was coming.
I thought it was supposed to come.
Because that's what gives the water dragons their power.
Right. I was like, so the comet.
So the fire dragons, from what I understood, they were all underground with the nameless one, but in different caves.
I think a lot of them were like hanging out in caves, sleeping after like they put them to sleep or whatever, and then they start waking up. So I don't think they were ever like not there. But yeah, the water dragons are just chilling with their peeps for 1,000 years. Like, okay. And then they're like, oh no, got to quench some fire again. Hold on.
To be fair, they also mentioned there was like deep distrust of even the water dragons, even from people who grew to like them. So
I will say, I understand the duality, you know, earth and sky, fire and water, east and west, like philosophy, religion, that kind of thing. Like, it was very present throughout the book, the theme of duality and balance. Mm-hmm. But I don't think the exact lore behind like the two types of dragons totally, like you said, made sense. Like, I got it, but I didn't get it.
Yeah.
Okay. This book is triple C thick, like I said earlier. And there are a fair amount of, I don't know if I would call them plot twists, but I'm calling them plot twists just because it's a lot of plot points that maybe you expected or didn't, like Isklin, the dragon loving town, actually being held hostage by said dragon through a mind control of the king, Kit dying, the Lady of the Woods being a shapeshifter who convinced her adoptive son that she was his damsel lover and had a baby with him. So which was your favorite?
So here's what my comment is on how you said they're kind of plot twists. They would have been more plot twisty, but she showed her hand every time, so you knew what was coming. So they were really good, but they could have been way more surprising. I don't know which was my favorite. The Cleo, fake Cleo thing was disgusting. So very not that disgusting. One.
Yeah. The one with the Lady of the Wood plot points were the only ones I didn't expect. So I guess it's my favorite just because it was the one that I didn't see coming. But I agree, Caitlin, she just like made a lot of things very obvious. And so I wasn't really taken by surprise by many of them.
I guess maybe my favorite would be the old lady who was making all the bad things happen to the queens. And then she got beheaded. I was like, wow.
Oh, yeah. The something What's of cups.
Name? Yeah. Well, the cup bearer. I forgot. Ingress Crane or Ingress.
Yeah. Something. I like that one. I did not expect that one either.
Yeah. And how like basically her intrigue killed Sabrin's mom and got Trudy to kill the king, and like, and that was kind of interesting. And Ingrid Crest, there, got it. I didn't totally see that coming, that she would be the one doing it, so that one surprised me a little more than most, and I was like, yeah, take her head.
Yeah. I guess I was surprised by that one for the reasons why she was doing the things. It was like this deep religious piety and like holier than thou, saying like, you're not religious enough or you're not devout enough. And I thought that was an interesting way of,
you whore and you queer, you can't be queens.
Yeah like it was interesting. I would say the most surprised one, because I was so grossed out by it, was the Lady of the Woods having her adoptive son's kid. I guess I never thought that you could stoop that low. So that's why I never suspected.
Yeah. Who would guess that she was seducing her adoptive son? And that now Sabrin is her descendant. I'm not sure how you would have put that together, but
I will say, I think the most surprising was supposed to be Tane having the other orb on her side, but like, I knew it.
Yeah. I was like, somehow.
Also,
this is,
I was like, wow, how convenient, was in you the whole time.
Well, because they kept mentioning her like old injury and her scar and stuff. I was like, so something's like, in there.
That's what I'm saying. She was showing her hand.
Yeah, no, you're right. You put it perfectly. Showing her hand in a couple of instances.
Okay, so a little bit of a general question. This book is huge. What was your favorite part?
Maybe Loth's little adventure with the pirates. I don't know. The pirates were always kind of fun. Like the bad ones kind of sucked, but the good ones were kind of fun and were like, this is life, kid, get used to it, you know. I don't know if I enjoyed it. I don't know if it was my favorite.
I like Tane rescuing her dragon. That was badass.
It was so predictable though.
I know, but it was badass.
Yeah, I'm gonna say probably the same. I think it's when Tane strikes out on her own. One of my favorite things is that like we actually get to see Tane briefly from Lost's perspective. And I really liked that because I feel like you just get a better idea of characters when you can see them from the way other people see them. And Tane was like more isolated of a character, so we don't really get that about her until later in the book. And like, so I just liked that it kind of rounded her out a little bit more, and she was my favorite character, so I was just always wanting to read about her.
Okay, I want to ask you a question. The end of the book, we can come back to like the actual ending battle things. Tane on the island at the end, waking up bleeding with the butterfly in her hand? Question mark.
I'm confused by that.
I was trying to read theories and I was like, I got nothing. And she's probably not writing a sequel, so I really got nothing.
I also had nothing. I was like, glad she's alive.
Yeah, same.
I was like, did she put the gem back in her side for the future? Did her dragon shapeshift into a butterfly because the world was rebalanced and they could shapeshift again? Was it her ancestor living there this whole time?
Right. And like,
did something?
That was my best theory, was that it was somehow her immortal relative reborn. I mean, there are, you know, at least one person in the book was a shapeshifter. So I was like, maybe this could happen somehow. One of my points about that, though, is I felt like before like the ending happens, all the characters, like everyone who's in the know, makes it sound like both Tane and Eid are definitely going to die by the amount of power it's going to take to silence the Nameless One again. And then neither of them die.
Yeah.
And I was like, are they not dead? Are they not tired? Like, are they almost dead? Like, what has happened?
Well, because Cleolyn survived, but the other queen didn't.
Right.
But did she? Because that's the one on the island. Mm.
But is she a butterfly? Yeah, it's, I don't know.
Or
but...
is it her dragon?
Yeah.
Right. So it left an opening if she wanted to write more books. Like, there were a couple loose ends, but also, like, if she had just not included that little piece, I would not be curious and I would have been very satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I feel like she'll maybe answer the question eventually, but there's like a lot of things it could be. And I was like, what? Why was that the last thing this book had to say?
And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it turns into a series, but I don't think so.
I don't think it's supposed to.
Because to me, I was like, the book would have felt more finished to me if Eid and Tane had died. And then the ending was the remaining characters moving on and mourning them and like building the new world.
Right. Instead, Eid gets to be the prioress. Tane is a badass.
Yeah.
Happily ever after the end.
Right. Which to me, like, did almost make it seem like there was going to be a sequel.
I kind of hope Tane would end up with like that other emperor because she's such a badass. He'd be like, screw the people. Yeah. Like,
mm-hmm.
That would
I
be
don't
cool.
Know. Of course, you know, it's all about being independent women and like,
don't need no man.
Mm-hmm.
Except we need Loth. He's so wholesome. I love him.
Loth is wholesome.
It was sad when he was like, Margaret, you can't fix him. He's dead. That was sad.
Yeah.
She was like, I think he'll be okay. And he was like, no, honey, she is dead. I was like, oh my God, that was the saddest thing to happen the whole time.
Yeah.
It was just kind of in there.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know if we needed all the little afterward things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anything else you guys want to comment on the giantess?
If you like fantasy, it's definitely fantasy.
Yeah, that is definitely fantasy.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a feminist version of a lot of fantasy books. There's not a lot of like really strong female character fantasy books.
Says some of the biggest ACOTAR fangirls.
Yes. Ever. Okay. But if you're done with ACOTAR, you need something else to read.
Yeah. Yeah.
That doesn't like follow traditional values or traditional plot points.
Right. There's no great bearded wizard making everything happen behind the scenes.
And it's not necessarily a traditional love story. Like, it's not man saves woman or woman saves man. It's very...
Woman tells hard truth so other woman falls in love with her.
Sure.
And then woman they have to do a long distance relationship. Yeah. This is my last thing about the book. I think I already may have mentioned this a little bit, but I can't remember. I felt like it leaned on the fact that it was inclusive rather than making itself a great book. And I would love to have great books that are inclusive, but I don't think you should read it just because you want to see female characters not be shit on. Like,
I would say the reasons to read it are contrary to what Casey believes, my personal belief. The world building is really great. You totally know where and everything is happening and what that place is like. And there were some really nice complex characters. Not all of them were complex, but
yeah,
they were very fleshed out characters and I enjoyed reading about them.
Ditto.
Yeah. All right. Well, lots of people really like the book, which is good because it's 800 pages. So that says something, but
not everybody's a literary snob like Casey, who can point out every flaw. And Casey, Catherine and I are just like, oh, I guess we were just along for the ride. Happy go lucky.
We're just look, readers.
I just want to say, I saw a TikTok the other day and it deeply offended me. This woman was like, look, can we just admit there's a difference between reading for pleasure and reading critically? And I was like, I don't have another mode. This isn't just my brain. I would read things more blindly if I could. I would have a better time. I literally cannot do it. I don't understand that.
And it all makes sense.
You're an English major. You broke yourself on purpose.
I'm going to blame my mom. My mom is an English teacher. I think she broke me. I'm not going to take accountability for my issues. No, thank you.
But your mom reads so many more books that are...
I know. My mom is like a total pleasure reader.
Reading is like your mom's personality. So
literally. Oh my
God. She's just reading whatever for what... Yeah. She said she read that weird Blue People book. Like, she's just reading whatever she wants to see what it's about, Casey.
She will read anything.
Learn more from your mom.
Yeah.
I know. I don't know what it is. I don't know why my brain is like this. I don't do it on purpose, okay?
Okay. So you didn't like the book quite as much as we did. What suggestions would you give?
I could name a few, I think.
You can't They're all say series.
I'm not saying ACOTAR. One is Aragon. That one, I believe, if I remember correctly, is male main character. So not like a feminist take, but like a really good fantasy series with like lots of dragon stuff. The other one I recommended before as well, and it's the Graceling series, which is a feminist series and like really, really good fantasy. And I think those are my main two. That's what I think of when I think of like really in-depth, like dragon-esque fantasy stuff.
I would say, if you like high fantasy, a lot of journey quest type story for the purpose of saving the world from a dark, fiery person, diverse cast of characters, but written pre-LGBTQ movement, I would say Lord of the Rings. Like, if you can make it through this book, you can make it through those. And I feel like it's kind of like the similar like quest to save the world premise. And there's people of all types of species that come together to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna break Caitlin's rule and say ACOTAR.
No. Hey, what book? We're reading a horror book. What would you recommend? ACOTAR.
I never have said that. This is actual fantasy. I can say ACOTAR.
I would actually recommend Throne of Glass specifically. That too. I feel like Throne of Glass is underhyped, and I think it's like it's less elf centric, more different world, lots of female leaders centric. So that's
excuse
why I'm
me,
an elf.
They're ever elves.
Oh, fae. Sorry, they're elves in my head, even though they're called fae. And so,
oh my god, it's a point.
Like elves? Like, are we in Santa's workshop?
I will give you this though. This is going to cause a whole nother discussion we'll have to have off the podcast. My sister finally finished Throne of Glass today.
Okay.
She said, and I quote, "If I didn't have such faith in Sarah J. Maas, I would have DNF'd."
Like the first book or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It took her like 2 months to read.
The first two books take a minute.
the third book takes it up several notches.
Yes. So. It's that's when the series picks up, but, is third through.
So I'm just saying.
But okay, I would say
every recommendation we make.
Yes. I would say Throne of Glass, the last book, is very similar to this book.
Also too conveniently solved. Yes.
That's why I said.
Okay. Enough ACOTAR in this episode.
Hey, that was Throne of Glass.
Oh, right. Anyway, enough SJM.
These are our opinions. Clearly you can disagree. Like my sister. Casey's mom, feel free to weigh in for us. And you can join our discussion at Busy Girls Pod pretty much everywhere. And visit our website. We're working on some reading challenges when we have occasional free time, which is not a lot. So check those out and give us a rate and review.
Yeah, join us and Casey's mom in discussing these books.
Yeah, and hopefully some other people too. We'll see. Maybe we can get some other people on this podcast.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's it. I'm Casey.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Caitlin. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.